Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is a HeadGum Podcast. This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, bonus episode number 2 for the month of August.
Our patrons, our Tony heads, chose this month's recap episode, and we knew it was coming. This one's been coming in second place in the polls months now.
Always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Until today, it's its special day. Today is all about the house that Jack built.
Ooh, oh, baby. My God. Lars von Trier scares me.
Yeah. I think he scares everybody. I think if you're not a little bit scared by Lars von Trier, you don't know anything about him.
And that makes sense, too. Yeah. If you don't know anything about him, probably you wouldn't be scared.
Nothing to be scared of.
Yep.
Except the unknown.
That's true.
Which is scary. Imagine if you were scared of every single person you've never heard of. Because, like, well, I don't know. What if they're scary?
I feel that way a little bit with, like, social anxiety. It's a little bit that.
It is true.
It's like, I don't know that person.
Better to go in scared.
It's, you know, better safe than sorry. Yeah. You never know, especially with Lars von Trier.
Especially.
So this movie came out in 2018. It is directed by Lars von Trier, written by Lars von Trier, and I think this is pronounced Henley. It's J-E-N-L-E, but it's, like, I presume Danish. Lars von Trier is Danish, and it just seems like it would be pronounced Henley to me. So
should I name my daughter that? What is it? Mm-hmm.
J-E-N-L-E.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not after me.
This is a completely different name.
Yeah,
it's pronounced the same, but it's actually spelled differently.
It's
so
Danish.
It's actually named after the co-writer of The House That Jack Built.
Have you guys seen
it's
that
a
film?
Danish writer of The House That Jack Built, excuse you.
Have you seen this movie? It's my favorite movie. Imagine if you led the conversation with a new person that way.
Henley Halland is their name. It is starring Matt Dillon, Bruno Ganz, Uma Thurman, Siobhan Fallon Hogan, and Riley Keough.
And this is an interesting cast.
Yeah.
Streaming on Hulu. Yes, it is an interesting cast. And it's also an interesting Lars von Trier movie to start with. This is our first foray into his films.
Yeah, this is the first one we've done. I'm surprised.
I don't think it's the best entry point.
Okay.
Because I think this movie's very much him reflecting on all of his other movies and his career at large. And so I think in order to understand this film, we got to do a little bit of backstory about his career and his life. He started directing movies in the 80s in Denmark, and he always premiered at Cannes. Cannes is like his happy place. Some of his movies have won, I think, awards there. Actually, no, I'm not sure now. But his movies are incredibly divisive, controversial, meant to shock and disturb and elicit extreme reactions. And so a lot of times people really hate them. A lot of people really love them. I, until this week, had only seen Melancholia. Mm-hmm. That is one of his more well-known films. Oh, that's not true. I had also seen Dogville, but it's been a long time. But this week I watched Nymphomaniac, The House That Jack Built, and Antichrist.
What? Oh my God, Sammy. Oh my God.
Aren't there multiple Nymphomaniacs too?
Yes, and I only watched part one, so I still need to watch part two, which each of them are 3 hours long. So,
oh my God. Ooh.
And Shia LaBeouf's accent is like so crazy in it.
Oh, wow.
It changes scene to scene.
How is his ass?
His ass is good.
Because you just piqued my interest.
His accent.
What
is Shia LaBeouf in that movie? What?
Isn't that where he and Mia Goth met?
Yep.
I mean, he's a great actor. We've talked about this. We won't keep talking about
it. He's great, but
just abusive and a bad person.
Yeah.
Also the victim of abuse, but still abusive himself.
Correct. Yeah. It's an explanation, not an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know him at all. I also just love to come out and say whenever we're talking about complete strangers, I don't know.
We don't know him.
This is an important reminder, I think. I don't fucking know anything.
No, but we believe women and we believe FKA Twigs.
I mean, FKA Twigs definitely is definitely do. Like, yeah, not lying.
No, it's not that, that like, one. It's not like a, well,
it's not.
We'll see I just mean like in terms of what he's like.
In terms of just talking about Shia on a first name basis.
Exactly. Shy.
Speaking of believing women, uh-oh, you won't believe that there is an allegation against Lars von Trier from Bjork.
Oh. Bjork.
He directed her in Dancer in the Dark. And she, I actually didn't read her specific allegations, but she felt bullied and uncomfortable on set. And I think he was like sexually inappropriate. Like sexually suggestive, like made a lot of lewd comments to her and things like that, which again, I'm sure that happened and it's not okay.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, strike one against Lars. And then in 2011 at Cannes, when they were at a press conference for Melancholia, he gave a real unfortunate interview.
Oh, boy.
Where someone asked him about something to do with Germany. It was a German newspaper that was asking him a question. And he answered it by saying that he was actually a Nazi and that he understands Hitler. And
what? Wait, what?
Loves to shock and disturb.
And this actually, I watched that panel. It's so uncomfortable. Kirsten Dunst is next to him. Like,
I was gonna say, he gets the most incredible actresses in his movies. Like,
I think the most part, people really like working with him. Bjork, I think, is the only one.
Okay,
that might not be true, but for the most part, people go back and work with him again. Charlotte Gainsbourg, Willem Dafoe, Stellan Skarsgård, all are in like a bunch of his movies, and so I think most people have a good experience with him, even though he does sound like he can be very intense. But okay, so some context, I think, for that panel discussion that I think is interesting and not excuse. Like, I think he was making a joke. I think it was a very bad joke. And you can see him doing the thing where when you've made a bad joke and you're trying to
explain it away.
Yeah. It's like he goes harder and harder.
He like doubles down.
Uncomfortable you see him get. And so instead of being like, haha, never mind, next question, he just digs a deeper and deeper hole. And some context for that is that he was raised Jewish, and on his mother's deathbed, she revealed that his dad was not his dad and that his actual father was German, and that she had an affair with this German man in an attempt to make Lars more creative, because this German guy was a pianist, and this event was like very traumatizing for Lars von Trier. And
yeah,
really like obviously rocked his sense of identity. And so I think that was the joke of like, well, I'm a Nazi, because he thought he was a Jew his whole life. And so I think he has a very specific relationship with German and Judaism. And so I don't know. It feels gross defending Lars von Trier, because I know a lot of people really hate him, and I don't necessarily want to be like, he's a good guy, you guys don't get it. Like, that's not my feelings. I'm just trying to like, just provide some context.
That's very important context. Yeah.
And it's also just it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we don't know him.
We don't know him. That's right.
And we don't know him. And so it's just important. When we do know somebody, we'll let you know. Yeah. Because we all know that once you know somebody, you can pass judgment on any choice they make.
About them.
Everything they do. Mm-hmm. If you've met Amen. Them, you have authority over all their decisions. Amen.
Amen. So after that press conference, he got banned from Cannes.
Well, wow.
A Cannes ban. Why did I do that?
A Cannes ban.
A freaking Cannes ban, which is his worst nightmare, because he's like loves Cannes.
He's a little Cannes boy.
He's a Cannes boy. And so I think
he's a Cannes man.
He's a Cannes man. Man.
And
he's
got
a
banned. Cannes
man. He's banned from Cannes.
He's a banned Cannes man.
He's a banned Cannes man. And I think that experience also was like pretty traumatic for him. And I think he's reflecting a lot on that in this film.
Oh, okay.
And this film was actually his return to Cannes.
Okay.
Cannes again. I was trying to think of a rhyme. Thank you, Henley.
The man can can again.
But I think it did premiere outside of competition, but they like did a little soft allowing him back in, like, all right, well, mm-hmm. you can play your movie. I will say Kirsten Dunst was offered a role in this film. She turned it down. I think Kirsten Dunst, her relationship with him was also soured at this event, because it cast this horrible light on Melancholia, and she is so fucking good in Melancholia. And I think a lot of people think that this is the reason she didn't even get nominated for an Oscar, when it's like,
wow,
I feel like it should have been this like amazing moment in her career, and it just became kind of like a taboo thing that people
so
don't want to talk about anymore. So I think she probably isn't, I mean, maybe they've gotten over it by now, but I think it did sour their relationship at the time.
Sure.
So basically all of this just to say that he is a very divisive filmmaker, and a lot of his movies piss people off. I feel like he has said that he likes being a devil's advocate, which conjures this like gross type of guy in your brain also.
Yeah,
and like,
it does.
He is that. I think he's also a like very talented artist. There's some amount of separating the art from the artist happening. I don't know. I find him really fascinating. I've enjoyed the movies I've watched this week, and I want to watch more. I think he's a weird little freak, and I'm just very fascinated by him. And I also know he's done some bad things, and who knows if I would hate him in real life, because we don't know
who
him.
Who knows? But we don't know him. We don't know him. And probably you're never going to have to answer that question.
Mm-mm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, you know.
But okay, shall we get into this?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
If you would like to hear the rest of this episode, you are going to want to head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast and join us in Tony fucking Collette's inner circle. There you'll gain access to all previous bonus episodes. We do weekly video trailer reactions. You'll get to vote for future episodes. It's a really great place to be. You're going to want to check it out. But if not, we will be back next week with a regular episode. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.